Hello, welcome to the Apple Insider Podcast. I'm William Gallagher. Our sponsors this week are ZocDoc and Fast Going Trees, more about them later. And as Wes Hilliard takes a vacation, and yes, by the way, I checked, he has brought his Apple Vision Pro with him, you and I get this chance to talk with Apple Insider's Malcolm Owen. Now, I work with Malcolm Owen every day, but it must be years since I actually spoke with him. So, Malcolm, the key thing, you're in Wales, I'm in England. Finally, I get to talk with someone who doesn't have an Apple Vision Pro. Are you at this moment talking to us live from outside an Apple store, waiting with £3,500 to buy one?
No. I am in no way. Well, okay. There's a couple of good reasons for that. For a start, the Cardiff Apple store is being refurbished, and the nearest one would be Bristol. And I've already gone there once this year. I don't want to go there a second time this soon.
Oh, it's a fine, fine store in Bristol. Everybody should go to the Bristol store.
Well, which one? There's two in Bristol. I went to the one in Cribbs Causeway, and that's...
Spoilt for choice.
It's a normal mall store there, so, yeah.
I've never been to the Cardiff. Cardiff has some incredible buildings, particularly around the Bay and the Millennium Centre. But I realise I've never been to Apple Cardiff. Have you?
Yes, I've been there. It was a fair while ago. It is your typical mall installation, so...
All right. So you're not saying we should all just get together, book a coach, head off on a tour of it?
No, not particularly.
No. Okay. If we were to get together, book a tour, get a coach, maybe something like an aircraft as well, apparently you've written a piece saying that it's extremely likely China is going to get the Apple Vision Pro next. But I think it's not because Apple said anything like that. You've just kind of read the runes, spotted the wind. What are the odds? China, what makes you say it's getting
okay,
it?
Okay, well, the main thing that's happened is that there's been a lot more activity regarding development of stuff for the Apple Vision Pro in China. A while ago, there was Tencent who basically pledged support that they're going to put their apps on there, which makes sense. And most recently, Alibaba's Taobao, I really hope I'm pronouncing that right, they've released a new shopping app. Just for China, and it is made just for the Apple Vision Pro.
Right. Okay, so it could be chance, but you think that's a clue?
It's a little bit of a clue. I mean, Tim Cook himself did say that there's a 2024 launch happening in China at some point. There's been some analysts' mentions that it's going to be happening sometime in April or May. So it seems to be lining up quite well. And then again, there's this whole pre-WWDC thing.
Which is what?
That it's a thing that could happen before WWDC, and that could be quite a useful thing.
Oh, yeah. I see. Sorry. Of course, in China, for some reason, I thought you meant anywhere else. Because just in the last couple of days, I've had two different people, various PR people, saying, have I got a headset? Well, one asked, have I got a headset? So they checked first. The other one said, can we send you this thing for your headset? And I had to reply saying, I haven't got one. I'm in the UK. And I suddenly wondered whether you also, as well as China, had spotted, I don't know, a Tesco shop being done. But I don't know if Tesco's a worldwide brand or familiar, but it's a UK supermarket. I'm sure they're going to have a native Apple Vision Pro headset. No, you're just looking at me now, aren't you? Let's say everywhere gets Apple Vision Pro by WWDC. Will you? And the Bristol store closes down, the Cardiff store reopens. Will you then be heading with your bundles of cash?
If I had bundles of cash, maybe, but... No.
It's a lot of money.
It is.
I mean, it's a Mac Studio price.
You could do a lot for $3,500. I could actually get a car and do driving lessons properly if I wanted to. I still can't drive. But I could do that for the cost of an Apple Vision Pro. There's so much you could do for an Apple Vision Pro, and it just seems like it's a little bit too much out of my price range. I think a second generation device would be a little bit better to buy. But it's a bit much.
Sorry, you just had me laugh there about you not being able to afford it. It sounded like it's because you couldn't afford it. What I was actually thinking was I sold my last car for £15. And while I was selling it, they said, we are raising money for a children's charity. Would you like to donate any part of your sale price? And I just told them I'd take the lot. Why not? That's how I ran that car into the ground, I think is the only way to describe it. I have a feeling, though. I mean, sorry, a bit of a leap here. financially, $3,500 is a huge amount. Of course it is. It's never going to be a casual purchase. I am a lot more tempted, mostly because of Wes Hilliard, to get an Apple Vision Pro. But I have this awful fear that I will enjoy it for a week and then just put it in a drawer and things. Do you think, yeah, price not an issue, you would find actual use for it?
I probably would. I mean, I do spend way too much in front of the computer, way too much time here. So I would love the idea to have a headset with multiple screens, multiple big screens, instead of having just the two I've got. I could have three. I'd love that. But yeah, it is literally the cost that's the problem here.
Do you know, I once had a setup in my office where I am now, in my home, looking out over all the seven gardens I can see. And I had, I think it was five displays plus iPad, excuse me, an iPhone, all linked together. And I thought this was great until I realised I was basically blocking out the sun. So I'm very happy to go down to one screen. I might not want to strap a screen across my face for it. There's got to be a fine line somewhere. And wait a minute, you wanted to get away from screens. This is making you closer to them. But at least you could go walk in the garden or drive or something.
Would like to say that Apple Insider does not recommend driving with the Apple Vision Pro. We've talked about this in the past. Don't do it. It's stupid.
It's funny. It's so stupid. It would never have occurred to me that anybody would actually do it. But of course they did. And I think some of it was fake, of course. But yeah, it's like I remember somebody saying they spilt some coffee on themselves somewhere. And they were insisting that the cafe should have had a warning saying coffee is hot. And I'm thinking, really? I mean, isn't there you bought it because it was hot coffee? I tell you, let's move away. No, let's not move away from Apple Vision Pro, because I've just realised something. You're much more of a gamer than I am. And I think, am I right that you do games on headsets already? So you know all this stuff.
Yeah, the VR gaming is a thing. And I do have a Meta Quest 2 that I occasionally plug into the PC to use for gaming there as well. But yeah.
Just occasionally, though. It's not a big, regular thing for you.
No. It's, what's the best way of saying this? I would like to be able to play VR games without the risk of stepping on a cat or a dog.
Okay, there is that. Because how many pets do you have at the moment?
Somewhere between way too much and why do you have that many?
Okay, right. So this is like the fourth bridge, isn't it? By the time you've finished feeding one of them, you've got to go back to the start and do the rest. So how do you get any work done? I don't know. But it's probably because of all your Apple gear, I would think. You see what I did there, Leap? This week's Apple Insider Plus is going to be... Apple Insider Plus is for subscribers, and it's a very conscious thing where we step away from the news and we talk about things that are just, you know, of concern, of interest to those of us who use Apple gear. And this time, particularly because it's Malcolm with me, I want to ask about the first time use Apple gear and how, you know, did we ever go back to PCs and all that sort of stuff. But in this case, before we get to that, I just want to talk to you about the Apple gear that you do use, because I understand, haven't you? You have an iPad now, don't you? But I don't know which one.
Yes, I've got the 11-inch iPad Pro with the M2.
Oh, very nice.
And I've also got the back in the olden days iPad Pro 9.7.
Oh, right. I had the original 2015 12.9-inch iPad Pro, and I loved it. It was like two iPads side by side. You felt like your hands were actually in the work, that you were kneading it like bread. But, you know, financially, just couldn't possibly do that again. So I'm also on an 11-inch iPad Pro, but it's an M1. Ancient M1. Who wants that? Yeah. But we have heard... Well, actually, no, more than heard, we actually know from regulatory filings that there are four iPads coming. And the fact that they're in regulatory databases means they're probably coming soon. It's not guaranteed, but it'd be incredibly unlikely if they weren't. It's believed that the four are actually two, that there's the iPad Pro and the iPad Air, but both of them, for the first time ever, in two sizes. And actually, I have been really strongly tempted by the idea of a 12.9-inch iPad Air, because I miss the 12.9-inchness, and I unthinkingly assumed that an iPad Air would be cheaper than an iPad Pro. However, as we record this right now, we've just learned a strong rumor from Ross Young, a display analyst, that the iPad Air 12.9-inch, it's coming, but its 12.9-inch screen is going to be exactly the one that's on the current 12.9-inch iPad Pro. You know, after a while, 12.9 stops making any sense. I'm going to say the bigger one. The bigger iPad Air will be the same as the bigger iPad Pro is at the moment. And I have to assume that that means the iPad Air, the large one's going to be more expensive than we all hope. Because I must be right, aren't I, that the screen is a massively expensive part of an iPad Pro. Do you know that?
I think it's the screen and the battery, because the battery gets scaled up as well.
Oh, I didn't think of that. Yes. Yeah.
So when you've got... Those are two big components, and those do certainly impact the price. I mean, we see it. We see it everywhere. I mean, it's the same as with the MacBook Pros, the MacBook Air, and so on. You're going to see this couple of hundred pound jump between sizes because of both the screen and the fact that it's physically bigger, and therefore they can get away with putting a bigger battery cell in there. So those two components do put a heck of a dent into the cost of whatever hardware you're getting.
I think I'm going to be disappointed here. Well, actually, I mean, I don't think this bit's going to affect me, but if it is true, and it does look likely, that the screen is the same, then I'm thinking about all those current iPad Pro users of the 12.9-inch size, the bigger size, who may have been thinking, we know there's a new iPad Pro coming, I want it, but I can help afford it by selling off my current one. So there they are. They have a second-hand iPad Pro now. People who are looking to buy one are going to be faced with a 12.9-inch second-hand iPad Pro or a brand-new iPad Air, which has exactly the same screen. And I think that's got to cut the possible revenues for somebody trying to upgrade. So I suppose you and I are all right, because if we were to upgrade, we'd be going from the 11-inch thing, and I don't know anything about the screen on the 11-inch iPad Air. This is becoming a show about money, isn't it? You can tell we're on the cusp of new products coming out. Do you fancy a larger screen? Let's start with that. Are you happy with what you've got there?
I'm reasonably happy with what I've got at the moment. I can understand the appeal of having a larger display, but it is more a case of if you're someone who does a lot with handwriting, or if you're doing a lot with note-taking, or if you're doing a lot with art especially, it makes sense to go for the larger screen. You want the real estate to be able to play with your Apple Pencil and so on and so forth. I have the writing ability of a spider dropped in an inkwell, and I have the artistic ability of someone who could draw stick men while half drunk. So I'm not really the target market for the 12.9. If I went for 12.9, it would be literally for bragging points.
Okay. Intellectually, I'm with you, because my handwriting is at least as good as yours, and my artistic thing is nonsense. But in the time I bought the 12.9-inch one for review purposes, I would not have chosen to do it. But having got it, I found that it transformed everything. All the work I was doing with all of the apps felt better, more responsive and faster. And maybe that was just because at the time it was a newer iPad than I had. It was a faster one, therefore. But it felt like the size and the scale really made a difference. And I've been kind of hankering for it. There was a patch when I knew I wanted an iPad and I was trying to figure the numbers for it. I thought, how much will I resent an 11-inch iPad? And then part of me was thinking, it's 11 inches, William, compared to 12.9. That's not even 2 inches difference. How big a difference can it be? And as it happens, yes, actually, it's a substantial difference. But I do love my 11-inch iPad Pro. You know, there's so many figures and numbers here, and we haven't even got to the prices yet, because we don't know the prices. I think I'm just going to desire an iPad Air bigger edition until Apple comes out and says what the cost is. I think your iPads, because what you said of the processor, your iPad must be a lot newer than mine. I imagine in general you're not looking to upgrade yet. Is that right?
Oh, no. So I'm certainly in the, if Apple brought out a new model of iPad next week, I would certainly be in the point of ownership where buyer's remorse is a thing. So that would
sorry,
hurt me.
Yes.
Yeah, it would hurt me so much.
Yeah.
If that happened, if it were later in the year, it would be less painful. But so soon, it will be way too painful, regardless how much they charge or whatever.
How do they do this to us? Tim Cook comes out and says, this is the best iPhone we've ever made. And you know he knows the next one's going to be better. They always say, it always makes it seem like it's a great thing. Apple has a fantastic ability to get me interested in something I don't want. I mean, I don't think they did it really as well with the Apple Vision Pro as usual. But I remember last year I didn't buy an iPhone 14 Pro. I thought I might skip the 15 Pro. But then they come out and they show it and it looks so nice and all these features. Then there's the action button, which I do still occasionally use, and they win me over through sheer... I'm a sucker for snake oil salesmen, I think. I've just called Apple snake oil salesmen. I mean, they have the technique and the talent of people like that. And I'd like to get out of this before I just go into litigious grounds here. Let's just say iPad Air is coming. We know it's coming soon. We think it's going to be May, partly because we're kind of running out of April and partly because June is into WWDC. But you and I are both going to la 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 cover our ears when it comes to it.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. Really.
It's not really responsible journalism, is it? But one has to look after one's own interests. One of the, this is only slightly related to the iPad Pro, but you put it in my head when you mentioned it. You said you've got the one with the M2 processor, haven't you?
That's right.
Right. I'm on M1. By the end of this year, early into next year, every Mac is supposed to be switching over to the M4. Do we think the M4 is coming to the iPad as well?
I think it would make sense. I mean, the iPad Pro has, pretty much stayed in lockstep with the Mac releases, especially when it comes to M1, M2. We're expecting M3. But then again, if M4 is coming out later in 2024, then maybe there's a chance that Apple will just skip M3 and put the iPad Pros into M4. Who knows? It's up to them in the end. But there's an opportunity for that to happen.
It's funny, isn't it? Hearing you say it in your accent, I realise every time I think of... When Wes says M1 or M3, M4 or whatever it is, it just doesn't cross my mind to think about it. That's Apple's processor. But when it's you and I talking, well, the M1 is the motorway I used to drive to London. The M4 is one when the M1 is blocked and I have to go another route for it. Why did Apple choose M for this? Actually, I suppose Max, maybe, but then they put it in an iPad. I think they make these names up at random, don't they?
Well, they do have a crack marketing team who insert Craig Federighi joke here. So,
yes, I've forgotten that. I know it's silly, but I really do enjoy his commentary on the crack marketing team. I had forgotten that. I should watch some of those. Okay. Talking about kind of segueing between the iPad and the Mac. I am currently talking to you through an M1 14-inch MacBook Pro. It is easily the best Mac I've ever owned. I suppose it's getting on for... astonishing. It's getting on for 3 years old now, but I have absolutely no possible, conceivable reason to upgrade it, unfortunately. Are you iPad only, like Wes, or are you a Mac user there?
Oh, no, I've got two Mac minis here. One's an Intel one that's off to the side as a server, and the main driver is an M1.
I was in a similar situation in my office, but over time, the Intel Mac was so slow as even a Plex server that I've just kind of left it gathering dust somewhere. What a waste of a machine, now I think of it. But okay. So, I'm sorry, which version of the Mac Mini have you got on Apple Silicon? M1, did you say?
The M1 one, yes.
Right, so the same as mine. So yours is also about 3 years old. And things. Are you hitting any limits with it yet? Are you happy with it?
The only limit I'm having is a self-inflicted wound, because I am still very much a Chrome user.
Right. Well, listen, Malcolm, very good talking to you. Thank you for being on the show this week.
Okay. Oh, calm down.
We'll talk faster while your battery power lasts. How's that then? Nice compromise there.
Well, considering that it's a Mac Mini, it's plugged into the mains, I don't think battery is a problem.
Oh, okay, we're all right.
No, I'm a Chrome user, and therefore I end up having to open up hundreds of tabs. I mean, right now I have got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, about 10 on that window, another 15 or so on that one. I got maybe about 30 or so tabs open right now, and I'm slightly concerned.
Right. I'm really sorry. I have to tell you that she doesn't listen to the show. I can tell you this. My wife would consider you an amateur there for the number of tabs. I think she did discover what the actual limit of number is. But you have 30 and they're in Chrome, so that's worse. I'll give you that.
Well, to be fair, I did close a couple of windows to start doing this just to be safe. So, yeah.
Doesn't Chrome have anything like... if you're a Chrome user, you may not even be aware of this, but Safari has tab groups and things. So you can have one window with all your Apple Insider tabs, and then with a click, you'd have, in my case, all the tabs for the Writers Guild or something. So rather than tabs everywhere, you just have a set. Does Chrome have something like that?
Yeah, I think Chrome has something like that, but at the same time, I've not really looked into it, and I really should.
Yeah. My problem with Chrome is not actually that it destroys battery life. It is more that I find it slow and heavy, and it just seems a bit ugly. And I kind of resent it when I'm required to use it because, you know, my bank's engineers can't be bothered to make something standards compliant and work with all browsers. I find that it's imposed on me rather than something I would choose. And that imposition means I use it grudgingly and also therefore I use it rarely. So Safari, which seems lighter and faster to me, feels like home. What is it that you like about Chrome that keeps you on it since you're using it more and better than I am?
It does the job, but also it is again self-inflicted. I have got so much of my life going through Chrome. I actually run three browsers on my Mac. So I do use Safari for some things. I use Firefox for other things. But most of my work and most of my digital life is done through Chrome. Ideally, I should be offloading it to something lighter and faster. But it requires effort.
It's hard to move, I think, from something... I mean, if you like it, stick it. The one thing you surprised me there was saying Firefox. I haven't thought about Firefox in ages because I got so bored of updating Firefox. I remember writing about Firefox 89 or something, and by the time I'd finished the sentence I was writing, it was now Firefox 90 and stuff. And it's just like, enough. There can't be that many significant updates to it. So I just kind of left Firefox in the corner, and until you said this, didn't realise I even still had it on my Mac. This episode of the Apple Insider Podcast is brought to you by ZocDoc. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Now, what first struck me as an Englishman with American friends is that ZocDoc answers a need I didn't even appreciate was an issue at all. I mean, I know the US, UK, we happen to have very different healthcare systems, but I was actually shocked to find that in the States it can be hard to find a doctor. I mean, it's not like there aren't enough doctors, but still finding one who is near you, who provides the treatment you need, and who takes your insurance, it can be startlingly complicated. And that bit, actually, about taking your insurance, everyone should use ZocDoc because without it, you can actually go to your appointment and only then find out that they don't take your particular insurance. Whereas with ZocDoc, you would know. You would know because it tells you, or because you can have ZocDoc just show you those doctors who do take your insurance. So if you're in the US and you need a doctor, no question. It seems to me that the only practical thing is to use ZocDoc. But I did just say that all of this was what first struck me, and there is more. You can search ZocDoc for doctors in specific locations, okay, or with certain specialisms, of course, but whatever you search for, however you search for them, ZocDoc will also show you reviews of those doctors from verified patients. So you can get a real feel for what any given doctor is like, and that's important. You need a doctor you feel comfortable discussing your medical needs with, and ZocDoc will help you. ZocDoc is about finding the right doctor in every sense. Plus, ZocDoc isn't just simple at doing all these things, it's fast. And you can get same-day appointments, but actually even The typical wait time, it's only 24 to 72 hours. Go to ZocDoc.com/Apple Insider and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc. ZocDoc.com/Apple Insider. ZocDoc.com/Apple Insider. And thank you to ZocDoc for supporting the Apple Insider podcast.
I'm sure I've got an Edge installation somewhere, but...
Yeah, I reviewed Microsoft Edge. I thought it was quite nice. But it's based on the Chrome engine, isn't it? So it's got to be pretty much... There's only a limit of how much more Microsoft can do. But I liked the collections feature. That reminded me of a little bit... It's not like Safari's tab groups, but it is a way of gathering together certain things. So I was using it for research. I was at a... history archive when Edge first came out and launched collections. So whilst reviewing it, I was also doing some collating research. So I tried it and it seemed very good for it. But I realised I've obviously never gone back. I finished the book, never looked back at it. I wonder if I loaded Edge now, a couple of years on, it would still have everything there. Yes, probably. Anything there except probably, anything you actually want. Yeah, anything you're looking for, that'll be gone. But everything else...
It'll all be consumed by the new Bing AI. I've forgotten the name of it. Is it? It's not Bing. It's ChatGPT is renamed to... I don't know. I've slept since then. I can't remember. Copilot?
Oh, Copilot. Right. Yes, no, I have heard of that one. I thought this was going to be another case like Google renaming things in the middle of launching things and stuff. Yes, Copilot. It's been there for weeks now. It's probably time it changed. To get away from the word Bing... I just remember, if you watch on television and any character ever says, I'll Bing something, you thought, oh, right, sponsored, are they? Because no human being uses the word Bing. Except, hang on, wasn't Chandler's surname in Friends Bing? This might be going off.
Yeah, Chandler Bing, yes.
Chandler Bing, there we go, the late Matthew Perry. The only one of the Friends cast who used to be invited into the writer's room to work on the scripts with them. There you go. There's a fact you... Couldn't get through the day without knowing. But I started all of this strange route off by asking you about the M4 and going into iPads. Given that you don't seem to be facing any obvious problems in your Mac, and unfortunately, I definitely am not. I know I'm not. I can see I'm not. Do we care about the M4? Because it's a big leap from the M1, presumably.
I think it's a couple of generations. And also remember, the M1 is always the one that doesn't have the media engine.
Now, I actually didn't even know that. Okay, what does the media engine do?
The media engine's the encoding stuff. When you want to encode and decode certain video codecs, there's hardware-accelerated encoding, decoding with the media engine for basically every single M-series chip except for the M1.
Well, I genuinely didn't know. Yesterday, I had to compress a 20-gigabyte Final Cut. I used compressor for the first time, and it took a 20-gigabyte Final Cut Pro Audio and made it a 15-gigabyte one, which didn't seem like a massive saving, but, you know, still impressive, I suppose. But I remember it took a good 30 minutes for it to do that. You're saying on any other M-series one, it would have been faster?
You have the media engine on literally every other model of M chip. So, of the M1 generation, the Pro, the Max, and the Ultra all have it, but the M1 specifically, the very first one, nah.
Ah, right. Actually, then I may have misspoken because I got the M1 Max at the last second when I'd actually ordered it, and I just decided, you know, this is going to be my only Mac for a long time. It's worth, you know, going a bit faster and that stuff. So I went for the M1 Max in the end. So actually, I have got the Meteor engine. You've just given me and taken away my excuse to upgrade to an M4. So
the only real people I think would want to upgrade to an M4, aside from people who want performance, in which case they're probably already on Pro or Max or Ultra chips already, or on newer generations already, but also people who are still on Intel.
Oh, goodness, yes. My wife just upgraded from an Intel MacBook Air to one of the new 13-inch ones, and she's finding the difference just like we all did. Yes, it's astounding. How did we ever last on Intel Macs for as long as we did? It's worrying, but yes. Mm.
And we're still going to have that as an advantage for people to upgrade from Intel to whatever the newest Apple Silicon release is for a while. I mean, Apple still supports the Intel Macs, but at some point that will stop.
Yeah, I think it supports, but in a kind of sniggering way. Is that a fair summary of it? Yeah. They probably don't put that in it.
I'm
how about this? Because, you again, talking to you, you always puts things in my head. I was asking you, Wes, about this to do with the iPhone and a bit the iPad. But one of the things we all hear about the M4 is that it will have AI features. I truly don't understand what an AI feature could be in a Mac. I mean, there's a neural engine already that's in the iPhone as well and things. Do they just mean bigger neural engines? Or is there something else, hardware, that could help AI?
Well, that is the thing that really confuses me as well, because, yeah, the neural engine exists. It's basically been a little bit better each generation. Same number of cores, except for the Ultras, which are double because it's basically two Max chips sellotaped together. I just think it's going to be more cores, more powerful cores at that. So, yeah, bigger, enlarging, okay. Faster.
I said the other day I had to write betterer, and nobody corrected me. But that's another story. I'm just thinking that I laughed there when you were saying the two chips sellotaped together. Actually, I don't know if sellotape just a UK brand. I mean, it's like sticky tape for joining things together. Right? All the work they must have done.
I mean, internationally, it would be a Scotch tape. But
Scotch tape, of course. Yes. Oh, and duct tape. That's also a good one. Yeah, I learned all about that from Burn Notice and these things. The things we learn from television. But, okay, there's Apple.
But, yes, the Ultra chips are Max chips that have been hot glue gunned together.
Okay. With apologies to anybody who understands the work that must have gone into that happening, that is fundamentally it. They enlargified it by putting two of them together. Why don't they put four together or three in a chain? That's why I'm not employed by Apple.
Why not? I mean, why not? I mean, I'm not a chip designer. I'm just a guy who thinks about things in very simple ways, as evidenced by sellotaped and hot glue gunned together. But surely Apple could just, you know, if it's connecting one way to on one side and so on and so forth, they could make it the other side and put four in there, and then it would just be insane.
I do wonder about how, like the division of labour, for want of a better phrase, even now with two of them together, is the first instruction goes to one, and then while that's doing it, the other one kicks in and picks up the next one. How do they divide the fighting load? There must be some incredible maths behind that as well as engineering. So maybe there are physical limits on what, maybe sticking three of them together just actually doesn't give you the advantage that you would expect. But we should try. Let's break our Macs up and see what happens if we glue the processors together. Okay, not the most practical thing I've said recently. Anyway, M4, more cores. Do we know if more AI neural cores will help other work? I mean, my mind's back on the rendering thing that these machines may be better at. Would an AI-capable M4 Mac significantly help my Final Cut Pro editing, or am I just wishful thinking about it all?
This is not a video podcast, so you can't see me doing a very, very obvious shrugging motion right now.
Still, we're getting the image. You know, I can picture it. Okay, right. Shrug as in, whatever, don't care, don't use Final Cut, or...
Who knows anymore?
Yeah, that'll do. Okay.
I mean, given Adobe's come out and said, oh, we've just done a ton of AI stuff in there. You can do generative fill and generative AI remove of stuff in video, and that's fantastic. And you can enlarge the length of scenes beyond the clips that you've got, and so on and so forth. Yeah. They've done a ton of AI stuff there. But also there's a bunch of other... existing things for editing. I mean, for video podcasts, there's various tools for using AI to automatically edit a multi-cammed podcast, so you can switch between the camera views automatically, and it cuts down the editing time of a video podcast really quickly. So there are things like that that could certainly help. And quite frankly, any extension from that would be beneficial, I would think.
Yeah, except you've got to assume that that specific example, it would be cutting on dialogue, wasn't it? Somebody else speaks, so you cut to a close-up shot of them. Whereas actually, editing, you would choose whether to stay on the reaction of somebody rather than the speaker. So it's not a mechanical process. It's actually an artistic process of what you're trying to convey for it. So, I mean, I'm glad you mentioned Adobe because it's on my mind to ask you about. You've written about the new one, and it's just, you know, quietly between here. I have some doubts. What's the name of Adobe? Is it? It's not Firefly. What's the
AI thing? It's the group of models and everything. Yeah, Firefly.
Firefly. Right. Sometime last year, or possibly the year before, I can't remember now. I think it would have been last year because it was all talking about AI, and 2023 is when that all kicked off. I tried to use Adobe Firefly to create an image of something, and it was ghastly. It was shockingly bad. I mean, even my artistic sensibilities were a little bit offended by how bad this was. Now, wrong is one thing, but bad, like asymmetrical for one thing. It wasn't an intentionally artistic asymmetric thing. It was just like things had been plopped down because I'd asked for them. And I was genuinely a bit taken aback by how poor that AI example was. I imagine in the right hands that was better, but are you saying now it looks like with all these video tools that actually it's becoming something usable more than it was?
This episode is brought to you by Fast Growing Trees. Did you know that Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the US with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers? Have I mentioned that I would be one of them? I mean, I'm in England and Fast Growing Trees in the US, but here in England, our climate is, well, yeah, let's call it a bit variable rather than just saying rain. And Fast Growing Trees, it isn't just, you know, some stockist of plants with things piled high. It's run by people who care. They care about the plants, they care for the plants, and they know what they're talking about. So, yeah, while I'm in the UK and Fast Growing Trees is a US firm, you can do with them what I would love to, and that's get advice. Fast Growing Trees has a 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee. I so love that name. And it has free plant consultation for life. And you need this. You need people who know plants, because otherwise I truly do not know how you can begin to search through 10,000 plants to find the right one for you. I mean, the right one in the sense that you'll enjoy it, that you'll like it, but also the right one in the sense that it's not going to wither away in your garden or in your home, in your den, because the climate conditions weren't right for it. What I can do is have the sheer fun, the pleasure of looking through this enormous Fast Growing Trees website, this 10,000 plants, and you can do that too. Plus, you can then order online. And once you do, your plants are shipped directly to your door within 1 to 2 days. This spring as well, Fast Growing Trees has the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code AppleInsider at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code AppleInsider at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code Apple Insider. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. But thank you to Fast Growing Trees for supporting the Apple Insider podcast.
I'm going to refer to a video by MKBHT, who actually talks about this at length. The gist of it is, especially when it comes to video, a year ago, there was the meme of generative AI video being especially bad. And there was a video circulating which was the prompt of Will Smith eats spaghetti. Okay. And it was phenomenally bad. It went viral. Yeah. But that was a year ago. And now you got, I think it's Sora, the ChatGPT included video, generative video thing. Sora, they're doing photorealistic humans. There are still issues. There are still things that are uncanny valley sort of issues. And you can sometimes see problems with the number of fingers on a hand and so on and so forth. But it's phenomenally better.
Okay. I sound convinced.
It's all improving.
Okay, yes.
AI generative stuff is still, for the most part, dumb and stupid. And it was dumb and stupid a year ago. It is still dumb and stupid, but it's an improved dumb and stupid. And it will improve. And eventually it'll get to a point where it's actually, you know, that's not half bad. At the moment, we're getting the, it's not that Will Smith eating spaghetti video. And it looks a lot better. I want to see it when they don't have the mistakes with the number of fingers and things like that.
Right. I'm going to say dumb and stupid is kind of my stock in trade. So I'm feeling threatened here already. I'm going to have to think about that. So just to recap, previously on this same edition of the podcast, we've talked mostly about things that are way off in the future, a bit way off in the future, slightly off in the future, or just not here today. I'd like to talk to you about something that is here today, mostly, kind of, a bit. Elgato, as we talked, this has just launched its Neo range. Now, I wrote about this, so I don't know if you're even aware of it. They've released five devices. So there's a webcam, a microphone, a stream deck, a light, and something you might understand better than I do, I think, to do capturing games. They've released them all. They've gone away from their usual familiar kind of black plastic look to a kind of shiny white one, and it all looks really nice. But they've also simplified things. So the microphone doesn't have as many controls on it. The Stream Deck it's somewhere between a mini and a regular Stream Deck. It's like there's just enough buttons on it and all this sort of thing. And they've lowered the price on everything. And I think it's actually, I mean, until we actually see it and use it, I don't know. But it looks like it's a great range for introducing people that were put off by the cost of other devices or just the fiddliness of it. Have you put any work into making video conferences better than just using your Mac's camera? Are you concerned about this kind of thing that Elgato is trying to help with? Or are you fine with whatever you've got on your machine right now?
I would not be concerned with anything that they're bringing out. If they're trying to make it easier for people to do video conferencing or with the game recording thing to do internet game streaming, like Twitch streaming, YouTube gaming, that sort of thing, yeah, that's all a plus. If they make it easier and lower the barrier for entry for people to come in and do stuff, that's great. There's little to complain about here. In terms of what it would replace, I mean, I do go the whole hog here and use a mirrorless camera as a webcam quite a lot of the time. And it's fantastic quality. It's overkill, but it's fantastic quality.
A mirrorless camera. I don't know that name. Is it
mirrorless?
Mirrorless. Oh, sorry. Oh, so actually, it's a proper DSLR. It's not not a webcam. It's a full on. I mean, you're a photographer. So it's a full on photographer's camera, just wedged in your face.
Mirrorless. Yeah.
Okay. So one presumes very expensive piece of gear. We can't all go to it. But do you find that the picture quality is, I mean, beyond good enough by the sound of it?
Yes. I would say. What I'm using is certainly way too far in terms of quality for everyday use. If you are doing a recording for broadcast or recording for YouTube or whatever, and you want high quality, yeah, that makes sense to use that. That's perfectly fine. For talking to someone on the internet, yeah, that's a bit overkill. I use a webcam as well here.
Right.
Yeah, I don't necessarily use the mirrorless all the time. I use a webcam here, and that's perfectly fine. But, if you can improve the quality of webcams, great. If you want to make it easy for people to switch between different scenes and everything for streaming, also great. If you want to make it as easy as possible for someone to want to record footage from their PlayStation so they can show people that they are the greatest at insert name of AAA game here, then yes, all for it. I have no problem at all with it.
Right, AAA, isn't that something to do with Alcoholics Anonymous again or something? I don't know what AAA means in games. It just means very good, does it? Top of the range.
AAA usually refers to high, big-budget games.
Oh, right, okay. Do people then record themselves playing games and show other people footage of them playing the game? Yes.
Yeah. It's an entire genre of YouTube video. PewDiePie made millions off it.
Okay. Right.
Have you heard of Ninja?
Well, I know what the word means, but I suspect...
Have you heard of Ludwig?
No.
Disguised Toast? These are all people who've made money off
Disguised
streaming games.
Disguised Toast is the name of somebody
who does it. Sorry. Disguised.
Disguised.
As in...
Wait. Disguised Toast as in raise a glass to you but hide it. Here's a piece of bread that's burnt, but I put it in a wrapper so you can't see. That kind of disguised toast.
Ladies and gentlemen, I do apologise for setting him off.
Yeah, it's a funny world. But, okay, I've learned something. I will possibly rush to see all of this. Okay, answer this. Back to a serious question, then. We started here with Elgato because I like what they're doing with this. I mean, yeah, it's got to be original because as we record this, it was announced today and not all of it is available yet, not quite all of it. So we don't know, but it looks good, and I love the idea of making things simpler. I realise at some point when simple means you're going to miss out on something. So I'm concerned with should you buy the Elgato Neo camera or the Elgato Not Neo one, and sometimes I think the lines are fine between them, but as long as it's good and what you get is great, that's fine. But then when you were saying about the fact that you have a mirrorless camera that you sometimes use for this, I have a problem here that I would really like to have permanently set up a filming thing for the YouTube videos I make, the 58 Keys videos, so that I could just sit at the same desk, do it and move on. But because I don't have multiple cameras and all this stuff and I don't really have the room, I find I'm forever setting things up and taking them down. Do you have a permanent station, or is the reason you don't use a mirrorless all the time because often you're off photographing something with it?
For me, it's a case of I need to use the camera away from the desk, so I'm not necessarily I've got a mount attached to the desk to be able to easily put the camera onto, but the camera's not there at the moment. It's currently in the camera bag, so I can wander out the door and take photos of stuff whenever I want. But yeah, there are people, and especially game streamers and YouTubers, who put a couple of hundred or a couple of thousand dollars worth of camera as a webcam because they want that quality.
I suppose it can be worth doing it. I mean, I went to 4K very early on the YouTube videos, and I'm glad now because it's amazing how some of the stuff from a couple of years ago is still being watched because it looks all right for it. I mean, hopefully the information in it is good as well, but, you know, the quality counts there. I should have combed my hair a bit more. I've noticed that. But, okay. When you are producing photography, then, what's your step for this? You take the camera out, fine, you come back. Are you an Adobe Lightroom kind of person, or do you have a particular step process you use?
With my workflow, basically I've got a USB-C hub, USB-C memory card reader that I plug into. I can now plug it into my iPad now. I import straight away into Lightroom on the Lightroom Creative Cloud on there, which automatically sends all the files off to Adobe's cloud, which I can then access on my PC or my Mac, and I can view them straight away on Lightroom there. But at the same time, I still have the files on the memory card, which I then offload onto a drive on my network somewhere, just as a backup, so then I can wipe the card and use it again for photography or whatever in the future.
So I'm interested in this because it sounds to me like you're quite split between very serious professional use. I mean, the photography stuff, it's, you know, not casual things, but you also do a lot of gaming and things. So it feels like you need faster hardware. So, or I would have said that, except, of course, this week we have all the news of game emulators coming out for, you know, the regular iPhone and things. Again, this is a game area, so I know little about it, but I understand that this is a big thing. Wes was explaining to me about all the legal problems and the grey areas, and since he said that, we've been learning about some of these actually happening, so he was absolutely right. Are you somebody who's excited by game emulators? Are you already playing something emulatorly, if that's a word?
I mean, I used to enjoy emulators. I've moved on quite a bit since then, but I can understand the appeal of them. I've moved on.
I've used an emulator for Mac OS 7, 8, 9 things, and it was marvellous. The nostalgic feeling, overwhelming, for about a minute and a half, and then I got back on to other work. So is that likely? Somebody's going to go to a lot of trouble to, I don't know the grounds, find some ancient 1980s Game Boy version of Tetris, wallow in it for 90 seconds and then move on like you have?
I think it'll be a little bit longer than 90 seconds, probably into the 90 minutes at least. But quite frankly, the people who use emulators are very much into game emulation for a start. So it's going to be that body of people who will be more interested in these emulators for iPhone and so on and so forth. There are going to be people who think, oh, I can pirate games and play them on my iPhone for free instead of having to buy stuff from the App Store. But I do have to remind people that's not necessarily the best way of doing it, and you really should own your games before actually doing that.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, there is copyright law and legalities and blah, 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 that get in the way. So
people's livelihoods depend on this stuff, so yes, you should.
Yeah, but people who are into emulation will already be very familiar with what they need to do with it.
Oh, good point. Okay, so yes, that's true. I was just talking about the fact that it used to be you had to find the ROMs from here and all that stuff, and then you have to find the games and things. It was talking about the legality and the problems of it, but one thing I didn't expect was the thing we had this week of emulators appearing that were then pulled again by Apple. And there's one called Delta that I believe is, you know, the one everybody wants. It's the legitimate thing, and it is now available on the App Store for the first time ever. Have I got that right? Is Delta the thing to look for?
Yeah, Delta, which is from, pardon the pronunciation, Tested Tech. It's an all-in-one emulator that's basically Nintendo-centric. So you're looking at the NES, SNES, and Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, Nintendo DS, Nintendo 64, all the main retro ones. And it allows you to basically play those games on your iPhone, which... yeah, that's basically it. The whole thing that you're talking about, the controversy, was one of the first couple of emulators that came up. It was basically a copy of GBA for iOS, which was the predecessor to Delta. And someone basically uploaded their version of that code, which was open source, but basically not. He didn't have permission to put it onto the App Store with ads and so on and so forth. So it was a bit of a stink about that. So that's been rectified, and now Delta's gone up. And it is interesting how this is playing out for Delta, because now the developer behind Delta is also doing the Alt Store as well.
Oh, right. Yes, I've heard of Alt Store.
Yeah, so Alt Store being the third-party app store that's going to be covering the EU and not outside of the EU because of the EU laws.
Right.
But Delta's available in the app store outside of the EU purely because you can't get to the Alt Store outside of the EU, only within the EU. So,
or at least not yet. I think that's probably likely to
yes.
come. At some point. Well, I tell you, on that bombshell, it's not really a bombshell, but let's go with it. That's it for this edition of Apple Insider, the regular podcast. So stay tuned for Appsider Plus if you're a subscriber. Malcolm, in the meantime, where can people find you when they want to ask you all these questions about photography, about iPads, everything? Where do people look to find you?
If you were to go on to Threads or Twitter/X or basically anywhere, I'm usually at Malcolm Owen. But yeah, that's basically it.
Excellent. And in my case, again, actually, I find all of these things are falling away. And although you can spot me on different platforms, it's always email. That's the best way to get me. Click on my name on any Apple Insider article and you'll have an email. And actually, I've been having some really nice ones this week. So thank you all. Very much. Also, thank you very much to our sponsors, ZocDoc and Fast Growing Trees. And thank you to you for listening. We'll speak to you next week.